It's about 10:05 on June 28th, 2011. This is the time and place scheduled in the Beck Auditorium at Dickinson State University in Dickinson, North Dakota, for the informal conference in the matter of the application of South Heart Coal, LLC, before the North Dakota Public Service Commission. In April of this year, the Office of Administrative Hearings received a request from the Commission to provide an administrative law judge to preside as hearing officer in this matter, that is, to conduct the informal conference and to issue recommended findings and rulings on the application. For the record, my name is Alan Hoberg. I'm the duly designated hearing officer. At this time, I'm going to take appearances from those that are sitting at the table, from the parties who have participated to this point, starting with the applicant, Mr. Bender, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Lawrence Bender, P.O. Box 1855, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing in this matter on behalf of the applicant, South Heart Coal, LLC. With me at council table is Rich Southwick. Rich is the Vice President of Environmental with Great Northern Project Development, LP, which is the parent company of South Heart Coal, LLC. Also present with me at council table is Rick Kinsella. Rick is a consultant with Golder Associates, Inc., and Golder is one of the companies that has been retained by South Heart in this project.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Ms. LeSueur, please.
Thank you, Judge. I'm Carrie LeSueur from Plains Justice, address P.O. Box 1398, Billings, Montana, 59103, representing Dakota Resource Council and Sierra Club.
Thank you. Mr. Grumman, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Mark Grumman. I'm legal counsel with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. All the way to my right is Dean Mose, Assistant Director of Reclamations for the Public Service Commission. To his left is Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, who is General Counsel for the PSC. And to my left is Jim Deitch, who is Director of Reclamation for the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Grumman. At this time, I'm going to ask if there's anyone present today besides those who are associated with the presentations that are going to be made by Dakota Resource Council and the Sierra Club and by the applicant who wishes to present information in regard to this informal conference today. And let me remind you, or tell you, maybe you don't know this, that there may be three sessions on this matter. This matter is scheduled, or was scheduled, for a hearing starting at 10 o'clock, and then again one at 7 o'clock, and tomorrow at 9 o'clock if necessary. I rather suspect that the bulk of the presentations are going to be tonight, but I would like to know at this time if there is anyone that's not associated with the parties that are up here in their presentations who wishes to present information today at today's session, would you please raise your hand? No one. All right. There is an attendance sheet being passed around. It's somewhere, it's going, there it is right there. Being passed around, I would like everyone who is in attendance to sign as indicated on the attendance sheet and to indicate if you are going to be presenting information individually. Again, not associated with one of these presentations. You can put a question mark if you decide later that you want to when we're still here. You're certainly entitled to do that. All right, briefly, a summary of how we got here today. On March 29th of this year, the Public Service Commission received the application for surface coal mining permit SHSH-1001 from South Heart Coal, LLC, to permit 4,581.4 acres for its proposed South Heart lignite mine to be located southwest of South Heart in Stark County, North Dakota. The Commission received numerous requests for an informal conference on the application. On April 6 of this year, the Commission issued a notice of informal conference scheduling this informal conference. As I I believe I indicated this informal conference will recess sometime today. Again, the evening session starts at 7. We'll probably recess fairly late in the evening. And then again, we'll resume tomorrow at 9 o'clock a.m. if necessary. On May 27th of this year, a pre-hearing conference was held, attended primarily by council, council who gave their names up here and who they represent, and Public Service Commission staff and myself. At this time, I'm going to read some of the matters that were discussed at that conference and some of the basis for proceeding as we're proceeding in this informal conference. This matter is an informal conference under the provisions of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 38-14.1, specifically under Section 38-14.118 and 38-14.119. As I indicated, I am requested to issue recommended findings and a ruling on the application to the commission. The commission will consider the complete record on this matter, in other words, all the testimony, all the documents, and all the matters in the file, and the commission will issue a final findings and ruling on the matter, subject to a possible request for informal hearing under North Dakota Century Code Section 38-14.130. The hearing officer, that's myself, and the commission will have 30 days to issue their recommended and final findings and rulings after the closure of this informal conference, and I'll talk a little bit later about when that will close. It was decided at that first, at the pre-hearing conference, that this is the first segment or session of the informal conference. In other words, these three semi-sessions, I guess you might say, that are being held today, tonight, and tomorrow is only the first part of the informal conference. Information presented today will be in the form of testimony and documentation. All testimony will not be under oath because this is not a formal conference, or formal hearing, I should say. We will proceed as follows today. The Dakota Resource Council and the Sierra Club will present information at the conference first. Council will introduce the presentation on behalf of those parties. I don't believe, Ms. Lesser, you're having any of your witnesses here this morning. Is that correct?
I think we'll have one.
One, okay. One witness will then come up and present information to me, and perhaps Ms. Lesser will give a brief summary of their presentation. The presentation by the Dakota Resource Council and the Sierra Club will be today and tonight. And she'll repeat somewhat her opening remarks tonight at the evening session because most of her witnesses will be present at that session. Today we will follow the Dakota Resource Council presentation by public testimony, and I'll ask again, is there anyone present today who are not associated with either the presentation of the Dakota Resource Council or the applicant who wishes to present information to the commission at today's session? There is no one. When we get to that point, I'll probably ask again, but as of right now, it looks like we will have no one from the public that will be presenting information today. In this overall session today and tomorrow, the applicant is scheduled to follow the presentations by the Dakota Resource Council and the public. The applicant will be making its presentation in response tonight, following the presentation by the Dakota Resource Council and the Sierra Club and any public testimony we have. So if you're here to listen to the presentation by the applicant, that is not going to happen until tonight. It's sort of problematic as to how we do that since we have these three semi-sessions, but it was decided in a little session up here between council and the Public Service Commission staff that that's the way we do it. And that's probably the best way to do it, especially since we only have one witness and perhaps no public testimony today. Because the application is not complete, this informal conference will be recessed either tonight or tomorrow, depending on whether we need to have a semi-session tomorrow. Then later, a second part of the informal conference will be scheduled probably late summer or early fall. Again, that'll be a session that'll have a similar format to this one, where the Dakota Resource Council and the applicant will make presentations and will again open it up for any public testimony. That is necessary because, as of right now, the application is not complete. So the sessions today and tomorrow are not the end of this. There'll be another scheduled informal portion of the informal conference later. At the close of the second conference, the one that's scheduled later, the applicant and interested persons and commission staff will be given an opportunity to file proposed findings and proposed rulings to myself as the hearing officer. We'll set a schedule for filing those proposed findings and proposed rulings and any briefs or memorandum that accompany those. And then the informal conference will officially close at that time with the filing of the last proposed findings and rulings. So that's probably going to be sometime in the fall. After the informal conference is closed, the hearing officer and the commission will issue their recommended and final findings of rulings within 30 days of that closure, and I mentioned that earlier. The findings and rulings, both the recommended and the final, will be issued in accordance with North Dakota Century Code Chapter 38-14.1, and specifically in accordance with the permit approval or denial standards of North Dakota Century Code Section 38-14.1.21. And I think I alluded to this, but the application and all of the filings that are in the docket at the Public Service Commission for this matter are included as information for the informal conference for the purposes of issuing findings and rulings. Okay. Here is the hearing procedure we're going to follow today, and it looks like it'll be abbreviated. I'll call on Ms. LeSueur first to give her opening comments in regard to the presentation of the Dakota Resource Council and the Sierra Club, and she'll do that, and then she'll call her one witness to present information. Following that, I'll again ask if there's any public any members of the public that wish to present information today, understanding that perhaps most of that will occur tonight. And again, the applicant, Southhart Coal, will be making its presentation tonight. Obviously, we won't be, as I indicated, we won't be reaching a decision on this matter either today or tomorrow, and not until the end of the informal conference, which is yet to be scheduled. The burden of proof or the burden of persuasion in this matter is on the applicant, Southhart Coal, to show by the preponderance of the evidence, also known as the greater weight of the evidence, that it's entitled to the application it is seeking under the facts and the applicable law. Any questions about the procedures today? A little bit complex, especially in view of the circumstances. Mr. Bender, any questions?
No questions, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. LeSueur, any questions?
Would you prefer that I speak from here or there?
Just a second. I think you can make it there, Mr.
Okay.
Sir. I just had a note that some member of the public was interested in the reporter, I guess, was interested in the applicant's response. But But the response of the applicant is based on responding to the presentations and the public testimony. Since we're only having one witness this morning, that seems to be a bit premature. And as I said, we'd indicated that that this was the procedure we would follow because we were anticipating most of that would be tonight. So I think we're going to stick with that. This matter was noticed as a hearing today and a hearing tonight and follow-up tomorrow if necessary. And I think under the circumstances, that'll be the best way to proceed because, as I said, we anticipate most, well, virtually all of the testimony of the Dakota Resource Council and the Sierra Club and public testimony to occur tonight. Ms. Lesur, please.
Let me just first call down the witnesses who are planning to speak. Mr. Treshock, Mr. Merrill, are both of you planning to speak or just one? Should we go ahead and take care of that this morning?
That's fine.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to just come down and join me, we can move through it. Thank you.
You have a copy of
it. I have a copy of it, yes. So joining me are Steve Merrill and Mark Treshock, who will be speaking for Dakota Resource Council.
It was C. Merrill? The names again?
Steve.
Steve, I'm sorry. Steve.
And M-E-R-R-I-L-L.
Right. M-E, two R's, I, and two L's.
Thank you. And Mark?
It's spelled T-R-E-C-H-O-C-K.
All right, Ms. Lesur, please.
We've distributed to the judge and to counsel a set of remarks that will be submitted in writing for Dakota Resource Council and Sierra Club and others associated with those groups who would like to submit comments together. There will be possibly some additional comments. These are what was ready in advance from all those who forwarded comments to me. The coalition would like to express its appreciation to everyone present for the efforts made so far to review the application in detail, respond to concerns expressed, and allow for a full public process. In particular, we thank the PSC staff for your attention to detail. For today's presentation, we've organized our verbal and written comments around six key areas of concern. Those are impacts on water supply and quality and water recreational opportunities, impacts on enjoyment of the Badlands, Theodore Roosevelt National Park, and other natural resources, reclamation issues, climate impacts, agricultural and business impacts, and residential and public health impacts. Speakers are staff and volunteers with Dakota Resource Council, Neighbors United, National Parks Conservation Association, and Sierra Club. Many of the people you will hear from have spent many hours on their own time reviewing the application and researching the potential impacts of this proposal. Some of the remarks relate to legal compliance issues, but are generally based on factual matters, like the existence of alluvial valley characteristics or the pace of reclamation bond releases under current PSC policy. In general, we will reserve legal arguments for the briefing stage of these proceedings. Our testimony is organized with a table of contents in the papers that have been distributed. More copies of that testimony are available by contacting me. My phone number is 406-969-1040. And my email address is clasur@plainsjustice.org, spelled C-L-A-S-E-U-R, plainsjustice.org.
Ms. Lesur, do you have any other copies for PSC staff up here? I believe you have one, Mr. Bender.
I've
given Mr. Bender a copy. I have one more copy, and my plan is to make more this afternoon. I drove over from Billings this morning with about four.
Could you provide the one
four.
Extra
yes.
copy, please?
There's the other.
Please continue.
I'll come back this evening with a big stack for everyone. We are before you today at a disadvantage because there is a great deal of information not yet available to the people most likely to be affected by the project. One major concern is that the following licenses and permits are listed in the mine permit application with the designation will be applied for: the Mine Safety and Health Administration permit, the Clean Water Act Section 404 wetlands permit, the Air Pollution Control permit to construct, the North Dakota Pollution Discharge Elimination System water quality permit, the State Water Commission conditional water permit, the NDPDES stormwater discharges associated with mining activity permit, and the Section 401 water quality certification. The applications required for these permits must include detail about emissions and pollution discharge rates that are not in the application. The extent of these impacts cannot be known or commented on until permit terms are in place, but the impacts will all flow from a decision to allow mining at South Hart. The public interest would be best served by having all relevant information made public and entered into any record of decision by the PSC so that the Commission's decision is based on the best available evidence and, if a permit is granted, can include all appropriate mitigation conditions. Although a finalized version of the application is not yet available to comment on, even at this stage, the inability of South Hart Coal to produce an application that complies fully with state and federal law after more than a year and multiple attempts is a bad omen for the company's future ability to comply with the law. Some of the 376 deficiencies identified in the March 28th deficiency letter represent major concerns about failure to plan for mining operations and reclamation activities in compliance with the law. For example, Deficiency 297 states, the reclamation schedule for pits 1 through 5 does not contain enough detail to ensure the plan is practical or feasible. Oftentimes, the reclamation schedule seems to contradict other sections of the permit. At other points, the application proposes less frequent impoundment pond inspections than required by law. It's Deficiency 259. Surface water management measures that are not approved best management practices, Deficiency 262. Siting mine-related structures in native grassland and woodlands that would not otherwise be disturbed, Deficiency 233. Locating impoundment ponds and haul roads where they would impact a deciduous stream bank habitat, Deficiency 203, and topsoil stockpiling practices that would violate state law, Deficiency 221M. The lack of familiarity with state law demonstrated by applicants at the application stage, when the incentive is greatest to demonstrate full compliance with the law, causes us great concern. If the applicants can't produce an application in full compliance with state and federal law and guidelines at this point, when the penalty might be refusal of the permit, what reason is there to believe that they will be more careful once mining has begun? And the first set of comments is offered by GeoHydro, Inc., consultants to Dakota Resource Council, National Parks Conservation Association, Neighbors United, and Sierra Club. GeoHydro is located in Denver and was not able to send a live representative today. I have their comments at page 5 of the comments distributed. On the subject of alluvial valley floor, GeoHydro, GHI, remains very concerned that the alluvial valley floor study that was provided to the Public Service Commission is flawed. Observations of the South Branch Hart River, the South Tributary, and the West Tributary made during our site visit reinforced our concerns that AVF appears to be present on the permit area. Each of these streams contains reaches that show meandering stream morphology consistent with channel migration through alluvial materials. In addition, we observed significant increases in flow volume between observations on the South Tributary that indicate inflow of water to the stream from alluvial sediments. Incision of channels below the level of adjacent floodplain areas appears to be less than generally portrayed in the AVF study. This indicates a heightened potential for sub-irrigation of the land during dry periods and is consistent with USGS color infrared photography utilized by the Office of Surface Mining in their 1985 reconnaissance maps of the area. GHI obtained a color infrared image of the area taken in August 1983 that clearly indicates the presence of vegetation showing less stress along the South Branch Hart River and South Tributary. Although less clear, vegetation along portions of the West Tributary also appear to be less stressed than surrounding areas. The AVF study concluded that, this is a quote, no significant diurnal fluctuations in the hourly water levels were identified in the hourly water levels in the alluvial wells, indicating that sub-irrigation is not present, unquote. It is not surprising that this was the conclusion drawn on the basis of the submitted plots. The water level plots were constructed at a scale that makes meaningful interpretation of the data impossible. GHI has requested the original data used to create the water level plots submitted with the AVF study and will examine the data at an appropriate scale to evaluate whether or not diurnal variation of groundwater level is or is not present. A second site visit by GHI and PSC personnel during the late summer to observe vegetative differences during a dry period would be useful to evaluate whether or not sub-irrigation of alluvial valley areas indeed does occur. On the subject of seeps and springs, GHI comments. Observations of the numerous seeps and springs that were encountered on and around the permit area lead us to increased concern about the number, persistence, and importance of springs that would be impacted by mining. Mining the area as planned will eliminate many seeps and springs, some of which are not noted in the application, which may be critical sources of water that supports wildlife, livestock, or crops during dry times of the year. Variation in flow rates from seeps and springs on and near the permit area has not been characterized. The probable hydrologic consequences of mining on the many seeps and springs in the area are not identified. The post-mining reclamation plan does not describe the presence or reclamation of seeps and springs that will be impacted. On the basis of one springtime site visit, we cannot be definitive on the importance of this observation. An additional site visit with PSC personnel during a dry season would be helpful in evaluating the importance of these observations. And on the variability of the hydrologic balance, GHI comments. Stream flow has obviously not been fully characterized. Observations of several of the flumes installed to measure flow in streams showed that the structures were submerged below the water and would have been incapable of characterizing stream flow at the time of our visit. Examination of data tables provided in Appendix 2.6-1 shows there were many instances when, at the time that surface water flow was being characterized, flow also overtopped the structures. Notations on the data tables indicate that, at those times, flow was estimated using the maximum flume height. Use of this convention effectively underestimates actual flow and skews subsequent calculations of total, mean, and maximum flow rates toward lower values. Our on-site observations of submerged flumes confirm that stream flow measurements presented in the permit application are skewed toward low values and that the overtopped flumes documented in the data table did not result from unusual environmental conditions. That concludes GHI's comments at this time. I will note that the additional information that GHI requested has been delivered. They are in the process of reviewing it, and they would like to submit additional comments when they've had the chance to look through all that data.
Certainly. Just for the record, I've marked your the document you were reading from, which the first page of which is an outline, I believe, correct?
Yes.
As my exhibit one, and then the second one, analysis of draft South Hard Coal Mining Permit, as exhibit two. So you're going to present a witness at this time?
Yes, the first witness will be Mark Treshock, Staff Director for Dakota Resource Council, P.O. Box 1095, Dickinson, North Dakota, 58602-1095.
Thank you. Mr. Treshaw.
So I live in Dickinson. I've served as staff director of Dakota Resource Council since December of 1993.
Excuse me. Are you hearing that back there? It's fine. Thank you. Please continue.
Okay. Dakota Resource Council, or DRC, was established in 1978 primarily by rural residents of western North Dakota who were affected by coal, oil, and gas extraction and processing. DRC members gave testimony when North Dakota's surface mining laws were amended to comply with the Federal Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act. Subsequently, DRC has engaged in numerous local and statewide debates about reclamation policy and its implementation. During my tenure at DRC, I think the most startling fact about coal mining in the state is that the second largest mine in the state, has not achieved final bond release for post-mining agricultural use for one single acre of land disturbed by mining. The chief reason for this failure rests in current Public Service Commission policies. These policies set out a scheme of bonding calculation that discourages applications for post-mining bond release. The effect of this scheme negates SMACRA's reclamation objectives and North Dakota's own statutes. And unless these policies are changed, they will extend to any new coal mine in the state and will extend the failure of reclamation to additional lands. No new mining permits, including the one now pending before the PSC, should be issued until these policies are corrected. The core of the problem rests in policy memorandum number 18 to mine operators issued by the PSC on February 3, 1987. That memorandum allows a single performance bond to cover more than one permit area at a mine and establishes bond calculation on the basis of a, quote, worst case reclamation cost determination on the basis of, quote, all anticipated mining disturbances up to the latest expiration date of the permits to be covered by the bond. Now, the PSC has fleshed out this memorandum in its reclamation cost estimating guidelines, last updated, as far as I can tell, on July 2006. In the section of the guidelines titled Assumptions to be Used for Developing Reclamation Costs for Mining Permit Performance Bond Amounts, it states that performance bonds are to be set, quote, assuming that the bond would be forfeited at the time when the reclamation liabilities are the greatest. The guidelines go on to state, quote, this condition is most likely to occur at the stage of the mining sequence when the area where suitable plant growth material has been removed is largest and the volume of material to backfill the open pit areas is the greatest. The guidelines go on to identify the estimated costs of earth moving, revegetation, the costs of reclaiming or demolishing such facilities as sedimentation ponds, haul roads, and support facilities and structures. There are two major flaws in these guidelines. One flaw is that no calculations are made for determining the cost of possible failure to meet two of the key requirements of mining reclamation. One, replacement as required under SMACRA, or that's Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, of water sources interrupted, contaminated, or diminished by mining operations. And two, meeting the state standard of 100% of pre-mining agricultural productivity on all lands permitted for mining and designated for post-mining agricultural use. Coal mining in North Dakota empties out many shallow aquifers used prior to mining to support farming and ranching by providing water for domestic use at farmsteads and for livestock production. Replacement of these water sources by alternative means, such as establishing stock ponds or accessing rural water systems, may make resident farming and ranching possible even where aquifers remain depleted for an extended period of time. However, the costs of these alternative systems may be considerably greater than pre-mining costs to agricultural producers. The PSC guidelines do not take these costs into account. Likewise, the PSC guidelines do not address costs that may occur in the form of reduced agricultural income should reclaimed lands fail to meet the state's standard of 100% of pre-mining productivity. These losses could be significant. According to an April 20th, 2011 PSC summary, 104,238 acres remain under mining permits in North Dakota. Assuming that up to 25% of these lands will not be directly disturbed by mining, and that roughly one-third of the land disturbed is designated for agricultural uses other than cropland, one might estimate that 50,000 acres of cropland is or will be disturbed by mining. At a conservative rate of 30 bushels of wheat per acre at $7 a bushel, these lands could be expected to generate $10.5 million per year in farm revenues. If these reclaimed lands achieve an average of 90% of pre-mining productivity, farm revenues in mining areas would decrease by over $1 million per year, basically forever. The PSC guidelines allow for no performance bond retention to compensate for these potential losses. A second flaw in these bond calculations is that the PSC's worst case scenario for calculating performance bonds amounts to a rolling bond system under which mine operators are given de facto bond release for work performed with no opportunity for public review. This approach clearly violates the right of the public guaranteed under SMACRA to call for and participate in public hearings on bond releases. In addition to this breach of rights guaranteed under federal law, the PSC's guidelines for calculating performance bond has the effect of discouraging mine operators from making applications for either partial or final bond release. This effect may be clearly seen in the PSC's own statistics on final bond release. According to these statistics, a little over 120,000 acres of land have been permitted for mining under state and federal law, and a little over 16,000 formally released from bond, less than 15%. I wrote less than 10% in the copy. Math isn't my strong point, but it's less than 15%. Of the acres fully released from bond, about 25% were undisturbed by mining, 50% were disturbed and reclaimed for post-mining agricultural use, and another 25% for other purposes. The number of disturbed acres designated for post-mining agricultural use and fully released from bond on currently active mines is only 1,456 acres. And the most dismal record, which I mentioned earlier, is that of the state's second largest mine, Falkirk, where not one single acre of disturbed land designated for post-mining agricultural use has been fully released from bond. So in summary, the current PSC policy on performance bond calculation must be changed before any new mining permits are issued. The policy fails to retain bonds sufficient to address costs that will ensue if the federal requirement for water replacement or the state requirement for post-mining agricultural productivity are not met. The implication of this failure is that the public will have to absorb all costs should these key requirements not be met. Moreover, the policy fails to safeguard the public's civil rights by allowing the reduction of performance bonds on specific tracts of mined land without opportunity for public review processes guaranteed under SMACRA. These failures have contributed to the slow rate of bond release application, the penchant of mine operators to buy up large tracts of land and hold them for decades, and the growing interest on the part of mine operators to seek post-mining land use change from agriculture to other uses that don't require demonstration of post-mining agricultural productivity. Surface mining is not a right, but a conditional use of land that may only be granted under the terms of SMACRA and North Dakota State Surface Mining Law. Current PSC policies on performance bonds deprive citizens of their civil rights and fail to hold mine operators fully responsible if they do not live up to the terms of their permits. It would be an injustice to the people of the South Hart area to allow another mine to be permitted there under these circumstances. Instead, the PSC should first make changes in its policy on performance bonds to comply with state and federal law and ensure that the full costs of mining are the responsibility of mine operators.
Thank you, Mr. Treshock. Are you going to have another witness?
Mr. Merrill will speak about soil.
All right. Mr. Merrill, please.
Okay, can you hear me all right from here?
Yeah.
I forwarded some remarks to Ms. LeSueur, and these remarks made 3 points, and I can furnish, we can get copies of those remarks made for the record, and Ms. LeSueur has a copy, but...
Ms. LeSueur, it wasn't included in...
That was the other document I gave you.
Oh.
You were the only one who has a copy.
Oh, okay.
We will make sure we get more copies of that made for you. But anyway, I'd like to sum up those remarks in a brief manner here. They really spoke to three problems that we see with this proposed new mine. That the greatest problem is that the proposed new mine is going to badly endanger future agricultural productivity in this area. It's going to mess up the agricultural use of the South Branch Valley in a very, very bad way, in a very serious way. The second point of our remarks was that the mining operations are going to have an efflux of various heavy metals, mainly heavy metals, but other water pollutants, especially pit dewatering pollutants, that will be put into holding ponds. In particular, the most active part of the mine is pit number one. Now, I have a map of the mine in front of me that was taken from the mine permit, and if need be, I can furnish copies of this informal map that I created last night. But
well, if you want it to be part of the record to consider, you should probably.
I think it should be part of the record because I think it shows some information. It was made from a map that was in the permit, but it what it does is that this map has dates of each pit. It shows each pit and it shows the dates that these pits are proposed to be mined, and so I think it gives a big picture in a way that no other document can.
Are you going to refer to it now the rest of your...
Yes, I will refer to this.
Scott, just hold on a second here. I'm going to see if we can put that up so that everybody can see it.
Okay, that would be good.
Jim, it's on the... So let's go off the record for a little bit right here now.